Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
The Heritage End of Year Fund Drive is officially on. Become a member today at heritageradionetwork.org/donate. Good evening and welcome to Fun Men About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. My name is Chris Kuzmi. My co-host is my lovely wife, Mary Izette, and Rachel Jacobs. We are not in the studio today. We have a couple pre-records. But this season, all seasons, are made possible by you, the listener, the donor. It's not too late to get a donation in to support the radio station at heritageradionetwork.org. Hit the beating heart at the top right of your screen if you go to the website. The programming on this network is just so much to be proud for. We are so happy to be part of this family, so happy to share what we're learning together through our episodes. And apologies again for being such a busy season that our episodes are somewhat few. It is currently December 2018. We're in the holiday season. And anyway, just thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting. Please go to donate at heritageradionetwork.org. The beating heart, the top right. Without further ado, I give you today's episode featuring Hops of New York State and also Brewing in India in the second half. Cheers, Ferment About It. Hello, good evening. Welcome to Ferment About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm here at Fifth Hammer Brewing Company on site with our friend Chris Holden from New York Hop Guild. New York Hop Guild. What is New York Hop Guild? And beyond that, well, let's start with you, Chris. Who are you? How long have you been farming? What got you into hops? And how did the Hop Guild form?
So I own Crooked Creek Hops Farm in Addison, New York, which is west of Corning, Steuben County. We started like 6 years ago. We were going to do a brewery because of the farm brewer's license, and grew up on a farm, got tinkering around with the hops, and that kind of took over. So we kind of continued to expand with that brand. And then I was approached about teaming up with some other farmers and basically making more of a marketplace so we could basically make sure that our stuff gets out to the consumers. As we were, yields were going up, quality was going up, sales were not going up for everybody, so that's kind of where, I was approached to do this. And so we formed the New York Hop Guild, myself and Willett Hop and Grain to start it off, and basically we're a grower-own merchant company for New York State hop farmers, as well as some of the other farms that we've partnered up around the country with in Michigan and Yakima Valley so far.
That's amazing. We've had a couple hop shows throughout the years, and we're really excited about the growth in New York State itself. But what we haven't talked too much about is kind of the history of hop growing in New York. Why is New York a good state for hop growing?
So obviously that's the first place it was they were grown, basically, when they came over on the ship from Europe. And I'd have to say that right now the diversity of the different areas that they can grow in, and it not be spread out too far over a bunch of different states. We basically have two or three different states worth of soil, geography, all that stuff built into a much smaller area, even though most of the farms are spread out a lot more, and we can fit more terroir, I guess you could say, in there as well. That's one of the biggest things, trying to distinguish our stuff compared to other people's stuff and trying to find the right growing regions for each one of those particular hops. New York being, 40,000 acres years and years and years ago, late 1800s, and I don't know if we'll ever get back up to that mark, but it'd be cool to see a couple thousand acres at least.
Why did that stop? You have 40. What stopped that 40,000?
So they most of the Germans, from what I understand, started moving, you know, south and west into Michigan, Wisconsin, Minnesota, and all the way out to, you know, California, Oregon, Washington. So I kind of slowed it down a little bit. There was a couple different forms of disease, and there was a blight, and then basically prohibition ended it all. Federal government came in and said no more hops, and everything got tore down. The trellises got tore down, and you know, after prohibition, there hasn't been a hop farm here until, you know, Rick Peterson put one in about 2 decades ago.
Wow. And are we scared of a blight again? Or do you think
not really. There's a lot of good control measures out there. We've got ways to make sure our plants are healthier through cultivation practices that we really didn't have, you know, 200 years ago. So not really. I'd say that the biggest thing right now is for all the farmers being newer at it, means the first generation doing this again, that we've all got to figure out our techniques for particular areas, and then we can kind of go from there. The yields and the quality is there, and it's only improving.
Right. I'm glad we're talking about generations of people, because when it comes to generations of hops and hop crops, you know, the more generations, the better the crop tends to be, and the better the yields and pounds per acreage you're able to produce. And that's a large part of sustainability, just as a business. What are some of the hop types that grow, in your opinion, exceptionally well, by way of yielding, and then by way of flavor, or excel at you know, desirable modern hop characters?
So yield wise in particular, Cascade grows exceptionally well here. We see well over 2,000 pounds an acre all the time. Even the guys that are newer at it, you know, they're getting yields that are just as good, if not better, than the guys out west. And particularly for flavor characteristics, I would say New York State's a perfect area for Centennial. Centennial grown in New York State has been wild. There's a lot more going on. There's more depth of flavor. There's not as much piney and floral notes. There's more citrus, fruit, tropical fruit. And we just constantly see high oils. Like, it doesn't matter what the alphas are. It just seems to be that the oils are always way up there, kind of like the big sexy hop. So we're really pumped about that, those two in particular. So we'll kind of see how they play out going forwards.
Mm-hmm. So I have access to a lot of New York State hops as a pro brewer. What is the home brew market for New York State hops?
I think for me being a merchant, I guess the best way to do that is to get hooked up more with a homebrew shop, so they can kind of market that a little bit more. It is a little difficult for us to have someone on staff to be able to, you know, do up smaller packages and all that, and organizing everything, or even having a storefront to be able to sell it at. So I think that's the best way to go. Most of the processing facilities aren't quite set up to be able to do retail through ag and markets, so that's another challenge. I think it's coming. It's going to get there. Best thing I can say right now is have those home brewers talk to the brewers themselves, or come right to the farm and, you know, chit-chat with farms and make a good relationship there. That's the best way for me to describe it right now.
Right. You mentioned processing facilities. About how many processing facilities do we have in New York State? And pelletizers.
We have, it's somewhere between 5 and 10. I know in my area, from Corning up to like Rochester area, there's 3. And there's one in central New York. There's one out on Long Island. There's at least 5. I know there was more, but I don't know if everybody's doing it as much anymore, which is good. Out west, you might have that many just in one small region in Yakima, but they're dealing with a lot more. But having more processors means that people don't have to travel quite as far. There's not as big of a footprint, which is nice. So, or if you only had a couple, you know, some people would have to travel 10 hours almost, it seems like, round trip to get their stuff processed and come home afterwards. So it's needed for sure.
Yeah, that's a lot. Is there currently more acreage than there are, despite the footprint? Like, are people then waiting in line at these processing facilities, or is it organized pretty well in optimal times for harvest? Or is this one of the many challenges that we currently have for the state?
I think it's organized pretty good. There's a couple guys that are working right through a good amount of hops. They do a really good job. We process our own stuff as well, and that's about all we do. We spread it out. I mean, we spread it out mostly because of timing and what we've got going on elsewhere as well. So it's really not that difficult. We wrapped up about 3 weeks ago, but we're also starting to see some differences in timing from harvest to the pellet facility, and some of the hops maybe needing a little bit more time. And so we're learning about that as some of the trips that we make out west, and Hopefully over the next couple of years, we kind of get some of these things really dialed in, and even you know, some of the varieties that are good make them even that much more better because of the fact that we're learning that side of it a little bit more.
Right,
the chemistry side, I guess you'd say.
Yeah, yeah. With the chemistry side, you also mentioned terroir earlier, and I know we've had discussions offline, and I think we've even spoken about it on the show a couple of times about how different certain characteristics are of hops that we think we know that are grown in New York State versus elsewhere. And how important is the distinction of saying New York State to it before?
I think it's something awesome. Like, it's obviously you're not going to want to get a certain variety that doesn't resemble what you're used to, because that's what it was basically grown upon, its popularity was grown upon. So I think the best thing with us to do right now is to find those certain growing regions that do accentuate certain flavors, resembles the original rootstock from Yakima or Oregon or Idaho or even Germany, and it just has its own little pizzazz, I guess,
right.
New York State pizzazz. And with the different growing regions that we've seen, we have it kind of dialed into for Western New York, about four growing regions, and they all have separate soil. The temperatures and the climate is basically the same. Obviously, year to year, you might get different rainfall, or it might be drier in some regions or whatever. But I think that's helped out by the Great Lakes, really. But it's nice to be able to see that just different soil will mm-hmm. accentuate certain flavors, and we can hopefully going forward we can expand on those areas to, you know, bring out this New York pizzazz to you guys at the breweries.
Yeah, we definitely love the New York pizzazz. So how many people are a part of the New York Hop Guild that you represent currently? Or how many different farms, I guess?
We represent 6 farms that we sell all of their stuff. We work with probably 2 or 3 other ones right now where we're contracting certain hops from them. And they're kind of playing out their options to see which route they want to go, if they want to keep doing their own marketing, or if they do want to work with us full-time. We're not here to push anybody into it, because there's a big investment in everything, and it's a little bit different. We're more of, you know, as a farmer, you're going to become more of a cash crop farmer with us,
right.
But it's also saving a lot of these farms a lot of overhead, I guess you could say, instead of having to go out and market everything, because that's can get timely and costly.
Sure. What are there growing practices that you can do to leverage desirable traits from a hop by way of early harvest picking, late harvest picking, and or nutrients to the soil or things of the like? Or is it just kind of like not a crapshoot by year, but just trusting the soil and trusting the natural evolution of a plant year over year?
So the soil-wise, I don't know if there's any studies out there, but yes, I mean, you've got to have a consistent soil. You can't just one year throw a bunch of nitrogen at it, a bunch of fertilizer, and the next year you do nothing. Obviously, that's going to change things drastically. It's got to be, you got to take care of your soil. Whether you're doing it through cultivation practices or more of an organic with cover crop and everything else, either way, you've got to make sure you maintain your soil. Otherwise, yes, you'll have variations in flavor. Mentioning harvest dates, yes, that's one of the biggest ones. And also training dates. If you change your training dates up too much, you're also going to have different flavors.
What is a training date?
Training is actually when we're taking and putting the bind or tying the bind onto the string or twisting around the string. And, you know, some like to be trained later on, and some can be trained later on, and some like to be trained earlier. So same thing with harvest. You can get different flavors. Whether with an earlier harvest compared to a late harvest. We're seeing this with some different varieties as well, where some guys are wanting more of a late harvest compared to an early harvest. Or there's other varieties they want an early harvest compared to a late harvest. And one of the biggest characteristics we're seeing is usually earlier you're getting a little bit more brightness, for most varieties anyways. Later you're getting a little bit more of maybe a danky resin, but if you get too far, you're getting into like an onion and garlicky type flavor.
Yeah.
So you don't want to go too far with it, but there is a threshold there for a lot of the varieties.
I want to shout out our friends, Alex Biederman and Jeff Lyons at Keg and Lantern, and also Jason Saylor. And they have a small little club where they are all using kind of the same hops, either sourced from you or any other state, New York State hop grower. And they're trying these different hops at different parts in the process of the same grist. And I think it's a really fun experiment to be able to, on our end, we have to learn how to leverage or how to brew with these to get what we want in the end, and figuring out what the coolest way of expressing the hops within a medium that that is desirable to drink. And I think that's a great thing. And that they're creating feedback for you guys. I mean, that's one of the reasons you're down here right now, is to kind of have meet on Monday, right?
With the, yep. With yeah, we met with them. I got to sit in on one of these sensories that they did, and it was really interesting. The hop they featured was Fuggle, I think, from Alta Vista. Mm-hmm. I think it's up near Albany. And yeah, there was a wide array of different beers that they had done between Alex and Jeff and obviously Jason. And yeah, it was very interesting to see what was there, trying to find this, trying to find that, know where the different flavor components were coming from. And I'm excited to see what they do, you know, going forwards with some different hop varieties. I mean, it's pretty interesting. It, yeah, hopefully it helps you guys out. Because just like probably with the malt, you got to figure out each maltster does things differently, and to be able to, you know, do exactly what you need to do with each one. So
right, and talking about kind of what beers lend themselves to, you know, it's all everything works as a team, right? You know, mm-hmm. It's a beer is one of those things where the sum is greater than or the outcome is greater than the sum of all its parts if you use everything right and correctly, and learning how to and where to use do that stuff. Like you were mentioning, Michigan Copper is good for.
We see it a lot in the Whirlpool. It's a good flavor addition. It's got a lot of depth of flavor. We are experimenting with some different areas in the state to get a little bit more brightness out of it. We think we found an area for that, mm-hmm. which is pretty cool. So it's going to completely change what you're going to be able to do with that particular growing region of Michigan Copper, which is awesome. Because now basically we can have the same hop. You guys know exactly how to use it, and you can basically get 2 to 3 different flavors out of one single hop. Yeah. Use it together or independently.
Yeah. To be clear, Michigan Copper is the name of the hop, yes. Not necessarily where it's grown.
Right,
so there's
yes.
New York State Michigan Copper is a variety.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah,
and that's one of your babies or one of your yes. prides and joys for your farm.
Yes, we took a shot at it. It's a Great Lakes Hops public proprietary, not exactly sure how they're listing it right now, but it was one of their first babies. It's got a lot of traction. We actually put it in well before it even had a name. We took a whack at it. Big gamble, I guess you could say, and it was a good one. So I think our luck is not, I'm not saying our luck's run out, but we're not gonna tinker too much with that anymore because we got that lucky. But yes, it's been an awesome hop. Particularly seeing the differences between Michigan and our farm even, and then our farm compared to, say, Willett Hop and Grain in central New York, and then another farm working with Cherry Lawn Fruit Farm up on Lake Ontario. It's pretty awesome. I mean, it basically gives you guys, in a way, a secret weapon, kind of like what you can do with Amarillo right now with what VGF is doing with placing it in different regions. It's pretty nice.
Is anybody leading the charge on hop breeding in New York State? Or is there a program? Is that happening?
So we don't have a program. The Northeast Hop Alliance has collected, I think it was 17 varieties to get sent out to Hop Steiner in Yakima to get them genetically tested to see if they're wild hops, or heritage hops, or where's their lineage, if it's a Fuggle or a Hallertau or a Saaz, usually are the main three. And then kind of go from there, and then they've applied for an educational grant. So hopefully that comes through, because then we can kind of place everything at the Geneva Extension Station for Cornell University, and they can kind of tinker with it and see how they grow, and hopefully down the road start breeding with them. I think there's some interest on private parties to do the same thing, and hopefully that continues to move forward. So we'll see what happens.
So yeah.
It's a timely effort.
We're doing some electrical work here at the brewery. Very excited about that. New dishwasher's coming soon. what things for New York State are we excited about then right now? So we have the New York State Brewers Association is doing another conference in early March for the second annual, which is kind of like our mini statewide CBC. Are there programs that are the hop growers coming to that and are things set up for that?
Yeah, we'll be coming up to that. And then Northeast Hop Alliance also has their annual meeting, which was back in December. Hopefully this next year we can get a little bit more involvement.
Sure.
We've talked about maybe joining forces with the malt community and do like a one, you know, kind of combining them together so that way the brewers only have to worry about going to one conference instead of multiple conferences because we're all busy. And hoping, you know, that kind of moves forward as well. But as of right now, that's really it. There might be some different open houses at different farms throughout the year as well. And for the most part, I think Northeast Hop Alliance is going to just about all the different meetings, conferences, stuff like that for the Brewers Association, and maybe a small forum, maybe not like everybody's there, but it's usually Steve Miller, our executive director, is there.
Yeah. How can we best help the growth of New York State hops? Just buy, talk.
It's a little bit of both. I mean, it's creating a relationship with the farmers and the merchants that you're getting stuff from, giving them positive feedback, constructive criticism. Don't be negative about it. Don't feel bad if you're giving them a bad report. You know, they need to know. They need to. You can't let them continue their practices the way they are if it's not good. You know, and going forward, you know, and then also word of mouth is good. If it's good, support it, buy it, use it. Maybe get it more into more your mainstay beers or something like that. So that way, it's more sustainable for both sides.
Right. Speaking of sustainability, I mean, it is really expensive to be a hop grower. It's really expensive to get a hop crop, and a lot of patience, a lot of time, and a lot of energy getting something to the point of selling. Why hop grow in New York State? Isn't the land better for something else that might be more sustainable for you as a farmer?
Maybe. I don't know.
Well, thanks for not looking the other side then.
It's,
thanks for making hops.
Yeah, it's one of those things that it's a very rewarding crop. Like, you get to see this little itty-bitty shoot come out of the ground, and it turns into this big, massive, 18-foot, however tall your trellis is, big, massive plant. It's just like... It really, probably just like you guys get the same, you know, buzz off from smelling a beer that you're just so pumped about. You smell it and you're like, yes, like that's kind of the same thing when you sit there and you're like days before harvest and you're just admiring the work you got to do. Like it's awesome. So yeah. I think that, you know, we kind of got bit by the hop vine, I guess you could say, and we've been doing it ever since. My family's always, you know, we've mostly done hay. There's corn years ago and everything. And
how many generations is your farm?
I'm technically the seventh generation.
Seventh generation, yes. Wow.
We've dated one of our barns back to 1790, late 1790s. The county books go back to into early 1800s, so I'm not sure if there was a generation before that, or a different family that built one of those barns, but we used to be tobacco plantations. So.
Okay.
We built the tobacco dryer that's there and everything. It's really cool. So there's some heritage there, I guess, as
that's
well.
Pretty amazing.
So
we'll
see what happens.
How many of the family are still in the family business? Or
it's my wife basically now, and my 4-year-old son, and my 8-month-old daughter that'll probably be the farmer.
All right.
My dad, the stepmother, and my younger brother used to help out quite a bit. It's labor intensive. They decided they wanted to concentrate on other stuff, so which is fine. But I really enjoy it, so it's rewarding.
Yeah. The beer wouldn't happen without that love and that kind of family. Beer is people, man. So thanks for what you do. Thanks for putting this together. And thank you for my future order of many, many hops.
Thank you. I appreciate it, man.
Cheers, man. Chris Holden from New York Hop Guild. If people want to be interactive or know more about the Guild, are there places they can go or join in the conversation, whether they're homebrewers or other pro-brewers that might be listening?
Yes, we got our Instagram account at nyhopguild, and then the website, nyhopguild.com. You can order hops online now. Been pretty aggressive on Lupulin Exchange as well. So different places, Facebook obviously, but Instagram is one that we use most often.
Right on. So go there. Cheers. Forget about it. Thanks, Chris.
For the past 10 years, Heritage Radio Network has brought listeners around the world the most important voices in food and drink. I'm Matt Patterson, the lead engineer here at HRN. 6 years ago, when I was teaching myself to brew beer out in San Diego, I listened to Heritage Radio shows for tips, tricks, and inspiration. Heritage Radio's programming simply would not be possible without the support of listeners like you. Become a member of Heritage Radio Network today and give HRN a strong start to our second decade. Choose from exclusive member gifts and stay in the loop on discounts to upcoming events. Now is the best time to show your support for HRN. Go to heritageradionetwork.org/donate.
Oh, hey, welcome back to If You Meant About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Next up, we have Mary Izette on site at Kings County Brewers Collective interviewing Nakul Bansal from Great State Ale Works in India. Enjoy.
All right, this is Mary, and I am at Kings County Brewing Collective in the Bushwick neighborhood of Brooklyn, New York. I am here with...
Hey, I'm Nakul from Great State Ale Works, a brewery in India.
And tell me, where in India?
So we are based in a city called Pune, which is 3 hours away from Mumbai or Bombay. And we are a production-only brewery. We are 10 months old now. We are supplying to 4 cities close by, close to our city. And I actually started brewing in Crown Heights when I was living here about 4 or 5 years ago. And that's when I met Tony from KCBC. And then we've kind of been in touch. And then when he came down last couple of months ago, we did a collab brew with him, which was India's probably first proper New England IPA.
Awesome.
And then... I happened to visit my brother who lives in the US, and then we did a collab with KCBC, which is a IPA with rice flakes and mangosteen.
Ooh, which mangosteen?
Mangosteen.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And you guys just did that?
Like 2 weeks ago.
Very cool.
And I think I'll miss the tapping because I'm heading out in 2 days. But by Wednesday, the beer should be ready. So
tell me, how did you... So you started brewing when you were in Crown Heights here in New York.
Yeah.
And then when you went to India or back to India, I'm not sure if that's where you're from.
Yeah.
But what... You know, how'd you keep going? Did you keep homebrewing? And what was sourcing ingredients like?
Yeah. So I actually homebrewed way more in India than here. I did a few batches here. I used to go to Bitter and Esther's. Mm-hmm. And John gave me my first kit and all that. And then I moved back and I started homebrewing. So I couldn't take my kit because it's too much, you know, luggage to carry. So in India, at least 3-4 years ago, you had to go to different markets, like the steel market for a boil kettle and the plastic market for a, you know, food grade fermenter and all these things. But then you kind of source all this. There are a bunch of craft breweries that started 5 to 8 years ago. They're really nice. So my first set of ingredients came from them directly. So that's they helped us. But now things have changed. New home brewers. There are a couple of websites that are giving equipment, that are supplying ingredients directly. Plus there are way more home brewers. Way more breweries. So breweries like mine are always giving, we always give out, you know, ingredients to home brewers and just as long as they give us a few pints.
Awesome. Yeah. So tell me what you brew.
So I love IPAs. So when Great State started, we made it a point to always have one IPA on tap at all our accounts. So that was more for personal want. Wheat beer, which is what sells the most in India, whether it's a German or Belgian, is our cash cow. So we have our version of a Belgian wit, which is these two, a pale ale and the wit, are our flagship beers. A third one keeps rotating. So we did a Saison in the summer. We did a Kolsch a couple of months ago, and now we are on a golden ale, Belgian golden ale. And when Tony came, we switched out our pale ale with the New England IPA. And we've just been brewing that. We're on our fourth brew.
Awesome. Yeah. So talk about sourcing your ingredients there.
Everything. Okay, so hops are fully imported. So we have our hops come from Europe. So if they're American hops, there's a European distributor who then sells it to an Indian distributor. And then we get it. Mm-hmm. Decently fresh hops. Not super fresh, but like the same year harvest.
Yep.
Now. That's pretty good. Yeast is all imported. So most breweries will use dry yeast because it's easiest.
Yep.
Some breweries,
right?
Yeah. And some breweries have their own labs. So kind of, you know, they get liquid yeast, they propagate, and then they use that. And malt, so base malt, we can use 6-row base malt, which is grown in India, which is sold also to the big commercial breweries. So we kind of use that for our base beers, and then any kind of specialty malt is imported. So it's Weimann or it's Kassel, which is what is coming into India. There's also Irex from Germany.
Cool.
So, yeah.
And then what does the craft beer market look like in India? I mean, I feel like, you know, here it's evolved pretty drastically over the last, you know, 5, 10, 15 years. So what does it look like over there?
So India has, I think, 3 pockets of brewing. One is in Pune, Bombay. One is in Bangalore. These two are good pockets. A lot of Indians who were studying in the US, who started home brewing, sort of quit their jobs, moved back home, and set up breweries. So you see a lot of experimentation with breweries in these two pockets, where we are trying to use local ingredients and we are, you know, trying to do new things, and like, you know, because they're all home brewers. There's also North India, where there's a different pocket where we don't relate to, because they're more in it for the commercial point of view, and their beers are not good. And so that's how I would distinguish the two types. And it's good. Within Bombay and Pune, we have now, I think, about 30 breweries. In Bangalore alone, there are about 40 breweries. So that's just one big city, but this 40 is a good number.
Yeah,
sure. Yeah, and it's growing. Only difference that I relate to from my time here versus my time in India, there are not as many home brewers. So the home brewing community is very tiny. So they are not able to make an impact either by setting up their own breweries or going and demanding good beer, because they know what good beer is. The Indian consumer doesn't know what a Dubbel is, because he's never had a Belgian Dubbel. So his first introduction of a brewery making a Dubbel is his reference point. So I think that's a challenge that we all face, because we have to tell them that, you know, this is different than what you've been drinking, but this is actually what it should be.
Yep.
Yeah. But we are so new and young that we all just try to focus on, you know, making good beer, not bothering too much with guidelines, BJCP guidelines, yep. Because we can't, it's too new for us to try to do that. As long as the beer doesn't have off flavors, as long as it's clean, it's good. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. And then I'd ask you about bars. So you're distributing, self-distributing,
yes.
In India.
Yes.
So what is the setup with bars?
That's, I think, one of the biggest challenges for me as a brewer is that I'm not just a brewer. I'm also an operations guy, because bars in India don't have dispensing setups at all. So
they don't have cold rooms.
They don't have cold rooms.
They don't have glycol lines.
No way. Nothing. So they don't have kegerators. They don't have taps. They have nothing. So a brewery that started 5 years ago, or maybe 4 years ago in Bombay, kind of showed us, the new guys, the path, where they went and convinced various bars, about 80 bars in Bombay alone, to set up kegerators. And because of them, and they're not giving these kegerators for free, because as small breweries, we can't set up these things. Like if you see big breweries like Kingfisher and Budweiser, they're coming to India and giving free dispensing setups, which we can't. So the bigger struggle has been done by the first couple of guys. For us, it's easy. It's still a bit challenging, but it's easy. So what we do is we go and tell a restaurant that, okay, you should have craft beer. If they're convinced, we will set up their whole dispensing system. We'll train their guys on dispensing, on CO2 and all that. And then I have a dedicated service guy who's just running around from one account to the other, making sure lines are clean, making sure, you know, we're training them. And so that's a challenge, because it's not just making beer, filling it in a keg and distributing. It's also, is it being poured well and what's happening? Yeah. But I think there are 6 or 7 bars now in Bombay and Pune that have set up their own distribution systems, own dispensing setups, which is great. So we and a bunch of other breweries are encouraging them to set up their own sets, dispensing units, so that, you know, they're not bound to me,
right,
to take beer from me. Just have 6 taps and take the 6 best beers, because I know out of 6, I know I can get 2 taps, and that's good enough for me.
Yeah. You know,
yeah.
So what's your next, what are you looking forward to? What do you want to do as far as beer styles or, you know?
Yeah. Great State, my brewery, is very focused on using local ingredients. So we have used very unconventional ingredients, which are typically used in Indian cooking, you know, like souring agents in cooking to make a sour beer. We've used like lemon zest from special limes from East India. So I want to continue that. And being,
so when you say souring agents, talk a little bit about that.
So there's a ingredient called kokum. Kokum is a cousin, or from the same family as the mangosteen. Kokum is the skin of the kokum fruit is dried and then used in fish curries on the coastal side to make sour fish curries. Kokum is also used to make a kokum syrup for a summer drink, a non-alcoholic beverage that we all grew up drinking called kokum sherbat. Sherbat meaning juice, so kokum juice. So we are adding kokum into our saison. So it's got this beautiful red color from kokum. Ooh. It's got this mild sourness like a Berliner Weiss or a Goza without actually going into kettle souring or into using, you know, lacto or Brett. Yep. Which is great. So things like that is what we are focused on.
Awesome.
And being here in the US, you know, I always go to breweries that are trying a lot of different styles. So I'm trying this lactose and coffee blonde ale. So I'm like, great, that's interesting because those kind of things will work in India.
Yeah.
Yeah. And of course, the New England IPA. After Tony brewed a batch with us, we're on our fourth batch now. And it's good response. So we'll continue making low bitter but super juicy IPAs and maybe even try using ingredients which can complement the hops when we dry hop and see how that goes.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for speaking to me. So if people were to find you on the internet, where would they go?
We are on Instagram, on Facebook. It's greatstate.aleworks.
Cool.
So yeah.
You can awesome. Thank you so much. Yeah. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Ferment About It on heritageradionetwork.org. If you like what you're listening, please support this radio station by clicking on the beating heart at the top right of your screen when you get to heritageradionetwork.org. Ferment About It. Ferment About It.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.